Off the Ball, GAA.
Reportedly that Brian Fenton has retired. The thing is, he's just 31. While he may be just 31, it's a decade, an unbelievable decade with the Dubs.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus cgamblingcare.ie.
So a week where the football started early on Thursday and finished late on Tuesday morning. Our time is in the books. Kian is with us on his holidays. That's a commitment, Kian. How are you?
I was going to go for the Tommy Walsh method here of having the old Zoom background on, but I couldn't find one that had me on a beach somewhere, you know?
So you are actually in Bermuda or somewhere. It just looks like your living room.
Yeah, I've got a green screen on my living room at home. That's the way I'm doing it.
Exactly, yeah. Mick, how are you?
I'm good. I'm also childless.
Where do we want to start here? Because everybody played, and we could literally talk about all the teams at this stage because there's something mad happening in most places or nothing happening whatsoever in many others. Do we want to start with the Bears job, which has become available after Thanksgiving nightmare before Christmas? I'm looking for the right pop culture reference here, but that's a great job, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's kind of why it's an interesting one, because I think you can argue it's a great job, but you can also argue it's not a great job, because, look, obviously you've got Caleb Williams there, former number one overall pick, and if we were having this conversation 6 weeks ago, I'd be saying it's definitely not a great job because he wasn't playing well 6 weeks ago. But over the last month or so, he's shown that high level of quality that you expect from a number one overall pick. And whenever you're coming in as a new GM and in this instance, it's going to be a new head coach. The GM is staying, apparently, which that's probably the point where I'm kind of going, that's why it's not a great job. But we'll get to that in a minute. But whenever you're coming in as a new head coach, you want to be able to either be able to pick the quarterback you want, or you want to be coming into a very talented quarterback. You don't want to inherit the guy that got the previous guy fired. And that's not what's happening in this occasion. So the opportunity of working with a quarterback like Williams, who has that incredible arm, who has all that upside. You've got a roster there that has some areas that need massive amounts of rebuilding, but then there's other areas where there are some quality. So there are pieces to build on. I think it's it'll be a middle-of-the-road job, I think, once all the vacancies come open, because I think there are going to be better options, but it's also the opportunity to work with the young quarterback is kind of the whole selling point. The opportunity to work underneath Ryan Poles, the GM, is not really that great of a thing, because when you are coming in, you want to change everything up. You don't want to, like, United got rid of Ruud van Nistelrooy. You can't hang him around when you've got your new manager coming in, because you don't want that connection to the older crew, you know?
Yeah. Okay, the Ryan Poles thing is obviously always concerning. It's possible, though, that, like, with reasonable management, this team would actually have a winning record and be heading for the playoffs.
Yeah, like, to continue that question in a way, Keane, like, in fairness to Poles, I know the reputation, but isn't it fair that they got, like, one of the worst rosters in the NFL and has built it into a reasonable one through a very smart draft with a stupid team in Carolina? And, you know, like, they got a receiving core that was ready for a new quarterback. I think they made a bad choice at running back, but he's acceptable. You know, he'll do the job. They've got two guys who can run the ball. Not sure about their line, but they're in the process of building. They've made some defensive moves as well. They brought in Sweat last year. You know, it's arguable that any of these are overall good moves, but he has at least put some pieces in place for a coach to work with.
Yeah, I think you're like the positive sell on it is you've got like Roma Dunze there. You've got a couple of offensive linemen who you could argue they weren't developed properly. Like, they've got the talent there. The guys like Tevin Jenkins and the right tackle whose name is Darnell Wright, I think is the right tackle's name. A couple of guys who are picked highly, who are considered very talented prospects, who came into the league, started straight away, played straight away, and then who haven't really developed. And normally that's a coaching issue rather than a GM issue if everyone agrees the prospects were good when they arrived. The one thing I would turn around and say, though, is I think there was some opportunity missed, opportunity costs with like the Montez Sweat trade, for example. I thought they overpaid for him. I think you look at Keenan Allen, I don't think trading for him was a smart move when you consider they were bringing in Odunze as a rookie. They already had DJ Moore there. I didn't really understand how he fit, and that's one of their biggest issues on offense right now. They need speed at wide receiver. They need someone who can open up the field, because once you do that, DJ Moore and Romo Odunze, in theory, because he's still a rookie now, next year they should find a lot more space on the intermediate and short routes, and that'll allow Caleb Williams to take more deep shots, which he hasn't really done a whole lot of this year, which opens everything up. So there's definitely personnel issues there. Defense, on the defensive side, the back seven obviously needs a lot of work. The defensive line is generally all right as far as I can tell. So there's definitely pieces there. I think the best case scenario for the Bears moving forward, the perfect opportunity here is you take the offensive coordinator from the team they were just playing, Ben Johnson, he builds the offense, gives it that clear identity that he's done in Detroit working under the head coach there, Dan Campbell, and then you have a structure for Caleb Williams to develop and build through. It'd be very similar to Tua with the Dolphins, where he struggled in his first couple of years or his first year or two, and then he got that very clearly defined structure and was able to thrive or at least put up big numbers because of that.
Okay, so when you say you think this is going to be a mid-tier job by the end of everything, obviously we don't know the other jobs yet that are going to be available, but what's the best job that you expect to become available? The Cowboys?
Oh, yeah. I suppose the Cowboys is always... Yeah, but the Cowboys is always that kind of level of team where it's going to stand out, isn't it? I mean, the Jets' job is already open, but the problem there is Aaron Rodgers. I think if you got rid of Aaron Rodgers there easily, I don't think that'll happen. You'd probably have a pretty good roster to work around and start to build a foundation on and just go and find a quarterback. I don't think the Panthers' job will come open now, like I did think previously once they got rid of their coach there. The Browns' job might come open, but I don't think so, because I think Kevin Stefanski can probably turn around and give away a lot of secrets there if that happens.
Yeah, I'm
not sure...
What about the Dolphins?
Yeah, that's one I could see happening.
Hipster coach run out of ideas.
I'm very interested to see where it goes. To be honest with you, I'm saying it's going to be a middle tier job based on history more so than this year, because I'm still not really sure who we're going to see go this year. The Giants job, in theory, will be a great one because they've gotten rid of their quarterback already, but I also don't feel like Dable deserves to go there, so it's kind of balancing things out really, aren't you?
Before we leave the Bears, I wouldn't mind just like reflecting on where we are with the quarterback draft class. Like, there's an argument that we're probably looking at, like, it's very early stages. We don't know yet. We're two-thirds of the way through the first season. But we're looking at a very, very good draft. Like, there's a lot of quarterbacks taken. There was 1, 2, and 3. Obviously, we had Penix taken for the Falcons. We haven't seen him yet, but Bo Nix was taken and has done better than you could have expected, regardless of, I know that there are some reservations there, Keane, on your side, but he's done very, very well. Drake May was outstanding on Sunday. Like, he really was, in a terrible team that contrived to throw the game away. And you've got the other two, obviously. Williams is catching up, seemingly, and it looks better every week. It looks like he's learning the NFL in the way you would expect a rookie before we started fast-forwarding him into Superman, like we've done the last couple of years. But I'm just looking, I don't know if there's, like, you know, if you look at the 2018 draft, it's kind of a famous one, but Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold seemed like they were busts, but now they're back starting again. You had Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, obviously, taken later than both of them in the first round, and then Josh Rosen was the bust of the five. I don't know if we've ever, like, there's four starting quarterbacks there. I don't know. It looks like we've got four starting quarterbacks for the long run out of this first round. And again, the way Cousins is playing, I think we'll get to see Penix at some point. It could have still end up being five.
And don't forget about JJ McCarthy, because Sam Darnold's struggling quite a lot lately. So he's not going to be back this year. But I mean, I don't think there'll be the question marks we thought there might be entering next year at this stage with Darnold, because he has regressed in that way we were all concerned that he would.
So you don't think Darnold is going to keep that job next year?
I think if we talked again, similar to just saying with Caleb Williams, if we talked 6 weeks ago, I'd have been like, yeah, 100%. But since then, that Jaguars game in particular really, really put you off. There's been so much of those mistakes, those flaws that we saw with Darnold previously that cost him the opportunity to be starters elsewhere. I think we're seeing that developing again. But then again, like, McCarthy's coming back from a fairly serious injury, as far as I can recall. So it will be a situation where I think there's a straight competition there, actual fair competition in all likelihood, because you've got a high first-round pick coming off an injury versus a veteran who's got question marks. So actually, it's a very rare thing where you get a real actual quarterback competition. I think that's probably what we'll get with the Vikings next year.
He's had a setback in his recovery as well, I heard. Okay. McCarthy, so he wasn't going to make it this season anyway. So
where did they draft him? Was it the third round?
Top 10, I think, wasn't it? 12th to 11th. He was a high first round pick.
Oh, really? I totally missed that.
He was, wasn't he?
There were six taken in the first round.
Have I got that?
Yeah, sure, you're right. He's the big, massive man mountain of a QB. Am I thinking of the right guy?
No, you're thinking of Anthony Richardson from last year, I'm guessing.
This is
JJ McCarthy, was the Michigan quarterback. He was the guy who didn't throw an awful lot, but he played for Jim Harbaugh, and everyone was kind of shocked that he went high when he did. I could be wrong. Maybe I have him in the wrong draft, but it's been so long since the draft. But I know he was a first-round pick at a minimum. But he was an interesting guy, because he was heavily criticized in college, and he was one of these guys who was kind of compared to AJ McCarron as, oh, he plays on the most talented team, so he doesn't have to do a whole lot at Michigan. They were like Alabama. But then when you actually went and watched him, you realize he was actually didn't throw a lot, wildly inconsistent when he did, but the upside of what he did was really, really impressive. So I kind of remember him being taken where he was being taken and everyone laughing at the Vikings and saying, this is ridiculous, this is crazy. And then I actually went back and watched him and thought to myself, no, actually, I can see what they were thinking, what their ideas were. So in some ways, he's kind of similar to Sam Darnold, maybe. They are two high upside, mistake-prone quarterbacks.
The Vikings are 10-2 as things stand at the moment, which is kind of remarkable. Like, Darnold will have
the last 3 weeks, you're kind of thinking, God, this is a team that are just like finding, they're like the Chiefs in fairness, and we give the Chiefs a lot more leeway, and understandably so, but they're scraping out wins in games they should be losing, having been impressive earlier on the season. It was 6 quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, which is
a record.
Yeah, I think it is a record.
And he was 10th, you're right. Yeah. JJ McCarthy was 10th.
Was he? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, Bo Nix was 12th and Penix was 7th, yeah. And then there was the top three. So it was a bit of a run on quarterbacks, but there's not, you wouldn't rule any of them out yet, which is kind of good 2/3 into the first season.
Two of them being redshirted. Go on.
The mad thing about that draft class was, going in before the draft, everyone said it was a 2 or 3 quarterback draft, as in, like, you don't touch anyone else until the third round. And then suddenly they all went in the first 12 picks. And for the most part, everyone who's taken a quarterback has been proven right. Obviously, Penix hasn't played, McCarthy's been injured, but the rest of them, they're all happy.
I think it's fine if you pick one, but you don't trade 3 first-round picks to get up to pick one. I mean, you know, who knew that that would be a ticking time bomb that blows up your franchise? Okay.
Although, I don't know if he's on the list, though, but Keane's going to start rubbing our face in Chase Young. Why do I always call him Chase Young? Bryce Young.
Young is on the list.
Oh, is he? Okay, right, yeah. I'll leave.
He's a bit far down, though. Third. I didn't put him at the top. It could be headline news.
Third on our list here. So the Eagles and the Ravens. The Eagles can't get no love. Just can't get no love. So they fall off a cliff. They're like amazing all the time, apart from this tiny little window. And it was like, oh, they're shit. The truth is that little bit of window where they were bad. Either side of that, they've been absolutely amazing the whole time.
This sport is kind of a funny one because, like, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the running backs, they're the stars, they're the people who we care about, and they're the people who we talk about. But realistically, after the quarterback, the most important pieces are those 5 guys on the offensive line in front of you. And in the Eagles, you've got a team with an offensive line that plays well every week. And in the Ravens, you've got an offensive line where Todd Monken's trying to figure out how to work around them every single week. The Eagles contained Derrick Henry in a way that nobody else has this year. And they did that not necessarily by putting everyone in the box and putting 8 or 9 players there to try and focus on Derrick Henry. They did that by letting their defensive line go to work and just beat the Ravens' offensive line over and over again. And they were forcing the Ravens into all these misdirections, side-to-side plays that made the offense struggle and made the offense kind of staggered. Like, you in the first drive, straight away, you had Jalen Carter and the defensive tackle there and the defensive end, Josh Sweat, coming off the edge. And they were just closing the pocket on Lamar over and over again. He evaded them for one massive play to Zay Flowers down the left sideline, but he had to work really, really hard for it. And you just knew that wasn't going to continue for 4 quarters because of how much pressure they were generating, how much quality they were creating. And then you have Vic Fangio in there. Vic Fangio is one of those guys in the NFL that everyone knows, even though he's not like a head coach. We know him because when he coaches defense, defenses play really well. And in this game in particular, he was dribbling in blitzes every so often, and it was coming at the perfect time to catch the Ravens offense off guard and just create these massive plays. Like, so, and then eventually, look, in the second half, Barkley finally broke off, got his touchdown. Jalen Hurts had run for a touchdown, thrown for a touchdown before that as well. Great play outside to Dallas Goedert. So the quality from the Eagles was 100% there, and the matchup advantages they had against the Ravens really, really stood out. And look, we can talk about both of these teams. Both of them are incredibly talented, but one of them understands their identity better than the other. One of them plays more consistently than the other, and it's not the one that we celebrate as often. And for whatever reason, I don't know. Maybe it's just because of Jalen Hurts not being on that same level as Lamar Jackson, and our focus goes to the quarterbacks. But realistically, Justin Tucker missed 3 kicks in this game, and that's what kind of decided this game itself. But the Eagles were the better team. It was clear to see regardless of those kicks.
Now, who do you trust in the playoffs? Is it the team with the superstar quarterback that you need to be a superstar to win the game? Or do you trust the better all-round team who have a reasonable quarterback who's playing better than he was at times last year, but he's also got weapons all over the place? Barkley's one of the best weapons of the NFL. It's no coincidence, I think, that the few weeks period that you said we're all judging the Eagles on, AJ Brown was injured for all of that. I know he's not having big stats games and all, but he opens up the field totally. You know more than anyone.
What a dud signing he was.
Nah, he's an unbelievable football player though, and you can see in
that fantasy, Mick. I don't care.
It's one of the absolutely, I understand that, but it's one of those things that you don't see until the commentator points it out to you. You know, one of those, like, the unseen work sort of stuff that they show on replays that we'd never, our untrained eye
sexy route running. Exactly, ooh, look at that. He's taking the lid off the defense blocking. While Dallas Goedert strolls in for a touchdown. You're like, well, that's useless. Absolutely useless.
There is one poetic justice, and you're talking about someone not contributing to the fantasy team. Nelson Aguilar, at a really key point in the game, had two deep throws. I think it was late third quarter or early fourth quarter. And they're both incredible throws by Lamar, and he dropped both of them. And you're just kind of sat there going, against the Eagles as well, you feel so bad for him. Because he's actually turned into a fairly consistent, decent receiver since leaving the Eagles. But now all those kind of drop taunts and all those Nelson Aguilar can't catch anything. The video of the viral video of the guy with the baby rescuing from the house, all that kind of stuff. You feel really bad for him. But this was a game I feel like they could have played it 100 times and you would have got 49 winners, 50 winners, like going either direction, to be honest.
Do you something about Justin Tucker if you're in the playoffs this stage? Like, he's a kicker, develops the yips. You're like, you've served us really well. It's been amazing. Thanks very much. Like, and it's going to cost me a fortune to get rid of you. But to win in the playoffs with the quarterback, there's only 3-4 more times that we're going to get to the playoffs. Like, what do you do?
I think you can argue both sides of this at this stage, which is an amazing thing to say because it's Justin Tucker. He's literally the greatest kicker of all time. I thought Belichick was talking about it interestingly this week. He said you can get rid of a kicker if he's wildly missing, if he's not connecting with the ball, or if he's actually kicking the ball in such a way that it's not reaching the same distances and the same heights as previously. And none of those are issues with Tucker. Like, his 3 misses from this weekend, he pushed the ball slightly to the right, he pulled the ball slightly to the left, and then he hit the post, he hit the upright. It's like, he's missed very slightly in all 3 of those. And I know it's been a season-long thing, but you're not talking about, is Justin Tucker the best kicker in the league anymore? Chris Boswell or whoever is better than him now. That's not the decision the Ravens are making here. The decision the Ravens have to make is, do we want Justin Tucker, proven over the last 10 years, incredible legs still, we expect him to be clutch when we need him to be clutch, this is a blip for the relative to the rest of his career, or do you want the guy off the street who has been cut from 3 other teams and we don't really know if he's actually that good and he can't kick as far? Well, you say he never misses. If he never misses, he'd be on a team.
Well, I don't know.
This is the thing, you don't know.
Well, so Jake Moody's on the 49ers and can't kick the ball over the fucking crossbar, but two lads off the street when he was injured managed to get it the whole time. But the sunk cost of drafting him in the third round means that he's going to play every game until everybody else gets run out of the building. So
that's not the reason you know. You're 5-7.
No, but well, some of it is has to do with missed kicks and key moments.
I feel like Justin Tucker has done enough over the course of his career that you'll get a pass if you go into the playoffs with him and he costs you a game if you're Jim Harbaugh or John Harbaugh, because realistically, like, none of us saw this coming, and I think at this stage you write him out and you hope he turns it around.
All right. Third on your list is like, oh, look at this. It's a lap of honour about Bryce Young.
Can I say, I did send an edited version of this list where the Steelers were higher, but let's get to Bryce Young. And it's not really talking about Bryce Young. It's talking about that game. That game was ridiculous. It was like it was funny. The Ravens-Eagles, actually, the game itself wasn't all that entertaining, turned into a bit of a damp squib. And at the end of that game, with 8 minutes left, Scott Hansen was on Red Zone. Was like, oh, we're going to lose our local viewers when we get to this final part of the game. Once the Buccaneers and Panthers game ends, I had 2.5 minutes left in it. And then within like 6 or 7 or 8 minutes later, he was like, right, so turns out the Eagles-Ravens game is already over, but this Buccaneers-Panthers game was exploded. And now we're going into overtime. And it was all because you had two teams, Adam Thielen and Bryce Young just kind of took over at the end because they had to bring the Panthers back. Thielen had that non-touchdown early in the game, which is ridiculous. I don't know how that was. I knew it was a touchdown. But then he had a touchdown at the end of the fourth quarter where Young steps through and throws a great crossing rail to him and hits him in the back of the end zone. And then the insane one-handed catch in overtime, which is just like Odell-like, where you're reaching back. He's going towards the sideline and has to turn around and reach back in that way. And it was a ridiculous play to make at a critical moment. And you've got to give the Buccaneers credit as well because they came back in the fourth quarter to get the field goal at the very end. And then obviously the Chuba Hubbard fumble kind of gifted them the game in overtime. But like that's fine. It's you'll take that when it comes your way. Like, overall, it was just a crazy game. And the Panthers, what's ridiculous to think is, like, this Panthers team that we talked about early in the year, if they had held on and won that game, they're 2 games back from leading the division. Like, that's a reflection of how bad their division is, but it's not something I would have expected when they were benching Young for Dalton a month ago.
Have they handled it well, the Young situation? They took him out of the firing line,
but said they were sticking by him and they weren't going to trade him, and nobody believed it. Now, Andy Dalton was in a car crash, so it was like there was no real way of, unless they did what the Chargers did to Tyrod Taylor, I don't think they were in any they had anything to do with that. But I don't know if they handled it well. But I have to say, I think that seeing, I don't know yet, Keen, whether Bryce Young's a good NFL quarterback or not, or a number one pick or whatever. But it's, we didn't see anything in the first, you know, 19 games or whatever that he played to at least illustrate why they picked him. And I thought there was a few moments even early in the game, Jared, it was like a third and long, or third and medium, say, and it was in the quarterback's hand and it looked like it was going to be a draw play, and he just held up and really, really coolly just lobbed it into the tight end for like 8 yards. And I just thought the composure he showed was just something I didn't know was in there. And from having watched him at all last year, that composure was not there. It wasn't a magical play. It was a play any quarterback can do, but he wasn't showing that kind of composure. And that's a really good sign. And now, at least for the rest of the season, we might see what he's actually made of.
Yeah, and he's 23.
With a bit of confidence, exactly. Still a young player, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, just so you realise, I'm not like the most crazy person here. I saw a few messages this week, or a few people writing things this week, about how the best sophomore quarterback in the league right now is playing Carolina. And I'm like, CJ Stroud's not playing well, but I don't think I'd go that far at this stage. That's a little bit strong.
Yeah, CJ Stroud's collapse, is that too strong a word, has been precipitous. And you're like, what's going on there? You know, maybe it's just a little bit of a funk and he comes out of it. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. We should talk about the best old quarterback in the league, Russell Wilson. What a performance by Russell Wilson and the Steelers. Now the Steelers. Now you're going to believe us. They're like, wow, this is all amazing.
All they had to do was be linked to the game in Ireland, and suddenly everything's come together and everything looks great again, I think. I'm amazed at this, to be honest with you. I did not think... Look, I knew the Steelers could win games, and we've talked about TJ Watt over and over again, and the defense and all that kind of stuff, but this was a 40-plus point game. The defense contributed one touchdown. It's not like they were putting up points over and over again and doing plays on special teams. It was all the offense. Like, Najee Harris somehow looks like he can run now. Like, he spent most of his first couple of years in the league plodding around, unable to move. Wilson is making plays like that he hasn't made since, like, maybe his 28, 29, 30 years in the league when he was that age. Now he's looking like the guy who can hit these deep shots all the time, who can extend plays within the pocket and escape pass rushes and make great decisions all the time consistently. Like, obviously the Bengals defense is a bit of a disaster and it made it easy on him. He had a lot of plays there that were short checkdowns that gained 8 or 9 yards, when in really against a good defense they would have gained 2 or 3. But for the most part, like, the offense is just clicking. Everything's working perfectly. The only major issue they have right now is George Pickens' brain, because he was very lucky to not be ejected from that game. He taunted the defender in the first quarter, and then he did the fake gun salute after a deep catch in the third quarter. He should have been ejected. I don't know what the officials made. They talked around it and somehow found a way to keep him in the game. But it's a concern. But it also, Pickens is playing on a level that's as good as any other receiver in the league. And Mike Tomlin previously has gotten rid of Chase Claypool, gotten rid of Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown in this category to a degree. He's gotten rid of these incredibly talented wide receivers who were character issues. And while Pickens isn't necessarily has a reputation of like fighting anyone or anything like that, or doing anything off the field, he's consistently a problem on the field. But he's still making plays enough that Mike Tomlin's like, wow, yeah, let's keep him, let's ride him, because we need him right now. And that's how they've got this record where they're in pole position in the AFC North.
Can they get to the Super Bowl? I was going to say, even win the Super Bowl. Like, they're going to have a home playoff game at this stage, you would say. You wouldn't trust that. You wouldn't be betting against them at Heinz Field anyway in January. And then, you know, what quarterback are you thinking is going to open up that defense? Like, do you think Josh Allen, maybe. That's kind of the one, isn't it? You're thinking,
like,
maybe
look,
the Bills.
Mahomes in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that I'm not saying I would pick the Steelers to beat the Chiefs, but I don't think the Chiefs want any part of them. Like, you know, I can't. That offensive line going up against TJ Watt and his mates trying to protect Mahomes, I'd be very worried about it. Like,
we've had a very offensive line centric podcast so far, but there are two guys here we have to talk about, and Zach Frazier and Mason McCormick, the center and right guard, two rookies the Steelers got, and they've just been bullying people. Like, they've brought back that old-fashioned Steelers football they had years and years ago with Jeff Hartings and Alan Faneca and Max Starks, all these guys who used to just line up and blow people off the ball. And they're kind of zigging where the rest of the league is zagging. Mike Tomlin is like, we're going to run the ball. It's going to work, because we've proven over the course of our whole careers. And they've got a tight end there. I think his name is Darnell Washington, something Washington, I think. He's built like Gronk, except if Gronk added 20 or 30 pounds and another inch of height. He's a giant, and he was taking out defensive ends and linebackers throughout that Bengals game over the weekend. So it's not only that the players are executing, that they've got an identity that it works, it's also defensively, you're not used to playing this type of offense that much. And I know the Ravens are there, and we talk about them as being this impossible offense to stop with Lamar and Derrick Henry, but not many teams have the really big bully offensive linemen anymore, because they all need the shorter, smaller guys who can pass protect.
If the season finished today, it would be the Chiefs with a bye, it's the Bills versus the Broncos, the Steelers versus the Ravens, and the Texans versus the Chargers. So you would, if the Steelers are on the opposite side, no, they're not, they're on the same side as the Chiefs there, so...
Yeah, maybe they don't want the Ravens in round one, a team that are very, very used to coming into their building either, you know.
Who they just beat?
They did, yeah. I wouldn't, again,
it's
it'd be open.
18-14 or something.
They didn't score a touchdown, yeah.
But that was before Russell Wilson rediscovered who the hell he is. Okay, so we think they're a real team. You can listen to their games live every Sunday on the Off the Ball app. The Dolphins.
Can I ask you, Jared, before we move off that game, so the Bengals are essentially out now, okay? Like, they're 4-8, I think. They're not a factor. If you're Ja'Marr Chase, should you be playing? Because Ja'Marr Chase, if you guys recall at the start of the year, he had a holdout or a hold-in, whatever it was, didn't get his money, was threatening to not play in week one, ultimately played. But now he's accrued a season. He's played enough games this year that this season counts towards free agency. He's got nothing left to play for. If you're the Bengals, would you sit Joe Burrow as well, considering how much of his health has been an issue and how much that's defined his career so far? I kind of feel like you've got to be smart at this point, because your team is massively underachieved. You expected them to get worse with Joe Mixon leaving, with Tyler Boyd leaving, but defensively they've been such a disaster that they're not going to be able to compete from here. I feel like if you're Ja'Marr Chase, turn around and go like, all right, guys, I've done enough this year. You're not paying me what you need to pay me. And if you're the Bengals, go to Joe Burrow and say, Joe, let's get the body fresh. Let's get you back for next year.
They're four games.
Am I just mad for that? Or?
So you'd say there's no chance of them overcoming at this stage. They're not mathematically out, but
yeah,
it'd be a miracle.
Never mind sporting integrity.
Well, like, you got to take business decisions too, though, right? Like,
yeah.
If either of these two get injured and you end up having, if say he does his ACL and he's another season,
yeah, they're not playing for the love of the game.
I don't know. I mean. Maybe they
I think it's unfair on the rest of the league, to be honest, if the Bengals suddenly down tools, you know, and do it so openly. And they have rules against, like, you know, resting players and back-to-backs and different things like that in the NBA. Now, they can't enforce them. It's one of those, but they do try, and every now and then they'll hold a press conference and say this has to change because it's not fair that the Celtics go to, you know, Cleveland with their full team and then the next night go to Minnesota with nobody and throw the game, basically. You know what I mean? So that, like, I think there is something to be said for openly tanking and just deciding your quarterback needs a rest for the rest of the season. You know, now, again, there is no rule against it. And if there was, you would just say, oh, he's got a sore knee.
And he's
had five operations.
He probably does have a sore knee.
He probably does.
Yeah, that's the thing. So look, maybe the business decisions get made. But if you're the coach and you're putting the team out and they're stinking and your home ticket sales have already been sold and the team is getting booed off at the end of the year, it sets the tone for next season. So you got to be it's a very dangerous high wire act to manage properly, where you lose the first two games next season, you're like, okay.
They always do for some reason. They didn't come back this year.
Maybe they're not very good. That might be the problem. So the Dolphins, you want to talk about them next?
Yeah, so the reason for this is, it's kind of twofold. You mentioned Mike McDaniel earlier on about a guy who could potentially lose his job, and I'm not necessarily against that as a thought process or as a consideration, at least. And this game against the Packers in Wisconsin is, I would tie this game with that Chiefs game, was it last year or the year before, when they went into Kansas City in the playoffs and refused to try and throw the ball downfield because Tua can't play in cold weather, essentially, and it was kind of an acknowledgement to that. And we kind of felt at the time, maybe that's a once-off. Maybe that's we had a specific game plan for this defense in this weather. It was an absolutely freezing game that day, so maybe we can excuse it. But this Wisconsin game on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, it was cold, but it wasn't like It wasn't like the Bills game against the 49ers the other night, where it was meters of snow on top of the pitch at the start of the game, as far as I know. It wasn't where it was debilitating. And they went into the game and just did not throw the ball past the line of scrimmage. Through the whole first half, I think Tua's deepest throw was 3 yards past the line of scrimmage. At a minimum, it was his best completion, at least. And then they're down 24-3 at halftime, coming out, and they come out in the third quarter, and they do these short throws. And on the other side of the field, you have Jordan Love up 24-3 or 21-3, whichever it was at the time, and he's taking a deep shot, and he hits Christian Watson down the right sideline on first down. And you're kind of going, that's the mindset of the Packers, that even if they don't have that great record, that's the mindset of a team that's trying to win, that's trying to score points in every drive and trying to be aggressive. But the mindset of Mike McDaniel and Tua, once they go to against a good team, it's always this. It's, let's play inside of our shell, let's play inside in the box, let's have all these really short, simple plays, and maybe we'll break one, maybe someone will forget to follow Tyreek Hill, and we'll actually get a great big gain off it. And it works against the bad teams in the league, but it doesn't work against teams that play good, disciplined defense. So I'm really kind of sick of the stage of where we've got the Dolphins in the regular season in September and October and whenever else, and it's like, oh, look at them, they're scoring 40 points, it's really exciting, look how great this football 60. Is fast track football, 60 points even, yeah, and we're supposed to get excited about them for the playoffs, and every single time I'm like, yeah, look what happens when they have to play on a pitch that's slightly slow, look what happens when they have to play against a competent football team. It's just, I don't think you can keep going forward with this 70 expecting points. To get any different results
against Denver. Yeah, who we thought were going to come back for a generation and now they're going to be in the playoffs this year. But I couldn't agree with this more. Like, I kind of think that, like, if you've got Tyreek Hill and your second best receiver is Waddle, who I think would be probably a number one receiver at about maybe 10 clubs, you know, like, he's a good player. And, you know, you've got
great running backs.
Lots of, like, unbelievable running backs and unbelievable, like, you know, options at running back, because you can do all kinds of different style. And that this is how you kind of, like, waste your offense. And I know Tua will get maligned, and that's fine, but I think he can do a job. He's fine. Like, you know, we've seen him do things. I just think that they're being held back by their system, by everything. But it's to waste Tyreek Hill when you have him, I just think, is unforgivable. And I don't know if McDaniel is, I've got his name wrong, haven't I? Mike McDaniel?
Like, yeah.
Has done enough really to keep his job. Like, he's been there 3-4 years now. It's, we've seen what he can do. There is an excitement to some of it, but it's been seen through. It's a facade. And I'm not saying fire him, but I'm saying it should be talked about, because he's kind of like the hot new thing in the league, and, you know, he brings a kind of something new to it, and there's a sense that, oh, this is the smart new breed, therefore we can't possibly get rid of this. I think you have to think about it seriously as to what kind of a job he's doing. The idea that is like, we can't play in cold weather. Right, okay, well, you know, move the playoffs to the summer then.
I mean, because could they try?
I think that's what Keane's saying. Like, give it a go.
Yeah.
See, like, what you can do.
In the off season, go to the southern hemisphere and spend some time in the mountains throwing the ball, and like, oh, I am at one, you know, with the ice.
With the elements.
Give him half on the case. Right. Bijan Robinson, right, looks like he could be one of the superstars of the entire league. And you're like, that's number 25, that's Tyler Algier in there. What's he doing there? It's like, oh, they're on the verge of scoring a touchdown here. Give it to Algier again. Wow, that's clever. They obviously know a lot about football, because it seems stupid, but it must be clever.
it's astonishing. I watched the game live. And for whatever reason, Bijan Robinson was like, doesn't start. He doesn't look. He might have finished the game with 20 plus touches, I think, because he was involved enough to that degree. But for example, and this is just the one that comes to mind, at the start of the third quarter, they come out of halftime, and Bijan Robinson is not on the field for the first 4 or 5 plays. And then he comes in for 2 or 3, and then they go to 3rd and 1, and he's not in the field. And then they had 4 3rd and 1s throughout this game. Sorry, they had 5 3rd and 1s throughout this game. They gave the ball to Bijan Robinson on one of them, and he got stopped short, didn't get it. Fair enough, defense made a good play. On the other 4, Bijan Robinson was either not on the field or not involved at all. And he was actually, or not involved at all, I mean, he was on the field, but didn't touch the ball or wasn't a play action to him or anything like that. On 2 of those 4 plays, they tried to run end-arounds, which were just blown up twice by Derwin James, because Derwin James was like, I can see exactly what's happening here. I'm going to jump into the backfield and take your running back or your receiver down. And one of those, they went to Drake London, who is a big, slow, ball-winning wide receiver, not someone who's going to take the ball around the edge and sprint away from the defense the way a Tyreek Hill would, for example, that we just talked about. So the whole usage here is just baffling to me. And this is a storyline we've had with the Falcons for a while now, because Kyle Pitts was there. Kyle Pitts was there previously, but I never bought into it with Kyle Pitts because I just don't think Kyle Pitts is that good of a receiver. I think he's an overstated tight end because he made a couple of big plays as a rookie, and he's a very good athlete. But he's drafted a bit like Gerald Everett to me.
He was drafted very high. Yeah. That was the other issue. It's like, oh, this guy must be really good. He's picked fourth.
Yeah, he's a bit like Gerald Everett to me. He'll make some plays, but he's not. He was picked ahead of who was the wide receiver he went ahead of again? Someone, was it Justin Jefferson or no? Sorry, Ja'Marr Chase. He went ahead of both of them actually, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. But either way, I never bought into it with him because as a tight end, he'd never shown me enough. Bijan Robinson, anyone who watches him sees how incredibly talented he is. He makes so many good plays. He's got this incredible balance. The Falcons actually in this game, every time they ran off right tackle, anytime they ran right, he was in the secondary making plays and making like 8 yards, 9 yards, 14 yards or whatever. And he looked like if you just kept feeding him the ball, similar to Saquon Barkley, he'd eventually break off a 70 yarder or he'd eventually break off a 50 yarder. But instead, they just kept going with Kirk Cousins and being like, hey, Kirk, go throw us an interception, please. Hey, yeah. Kirk, we had that one interception. Can you throw two more for us? You know that one you've done all season long where you stare down the wide receiver, you start your throwing motion that we talked about in the first month of this show, that where you stare him down, you go to throw, and then you realize you're not supposed to throw because it's going to be an interception, but then you do it anyway. Thanks for doing that again midway through the second quarter. We definitely needed that to help us. I don't know what the Falcons are thinking. I don't know what the whole purpose of the team is, and I don't know what the design of the offense is at this stage, because it's definitely not get the ball to your best players in positions where they're going to succeed. It's the opposite of that.
On the plus side, though, and like, I mean, they brought in a new coach who's obviously defensive minded, and they were the first team to make Herbert look like not mortal this year, but they wrapped him up, like, you know, and that's what kept him in the game despite Cousins' constant interception after interception. But I can't get my head around how you have a new coaching staff, you have a new quarterback, and you're doing all the same thing. You know, like, fair enough, you're right about Pitts 2 years ago. Last year, they weren't getting it to Robinson either, you know, and now they're not again. And that sort of thing just doesn't make any sense. We keep talking about how Atlanta are set up with this young running back, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, whether you want to include him in there or not. Fair enough either way, I think, you know, and that they're all set up and say Cousins is coming into this brilliant situation. But they just seem to have a game plan that even though they fired their coach and changed their quarterback is the exact same.
Which is mad that the same issue persists. That was an absolutely horrific draft, though. It was the post-COVID draft, so maybe...
Eighth, was he?
That is, he was fourth. I was right.
He was fourth, wow.
Trevor Lawrence was first, Zach Wilson was second, Trey Lance was third, Kyle Pitts was fourth, and then it gets Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, Penei Sewell, but then after that, so Patrick Surtain is in the top 10 as well, but the picks after
what,
that...
What did Sewell go down to?
Nick Parson was 12th, 7th.
Seven, so he could nearly have been number one.
But you know, there was
Bengals had the choice between Sewell and Ja'Marr Chase, and it was like this raging argument in the fan base because they knew they were going to for months and months in the end. And it's why the draft is kind of stupid, because no matter who they took there, they were like going to be delighted because they got an all pro at an important position, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Although to your point earlier on about the importance of the line, you do think like Sewell has been a difference maker and a tone setter for Detroit, and maybe they wouldn't have lost the amount of games that they lost through injury.
And this was at a time when Joe Burrow, after his first maybe season or two seasons, whatever it was just getting destroyed, and they basically had nobody to protect him. At the same time, though, I have to say, we should be practical and we should be getting left tackles, especially game-changing ones, and they're going to build you for a generation. But if your other choice is Ja'Marr Chase, like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Well, it's not like...
But Ja'Marr Chase was picked one ahead of Waddle, who everybody thought was like, wow, he is going to be absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's Grant. He's fine. He's a very serviceable.
Yeah, he's not Chase.
He'll be making $20 million a year whenever the contract comes up. But on a
that is
team.
The Justin Jefferson draft too, isn't it?
I don't think so.
He's done like 17, 18, 19 in around that.
No.
That was the pick range.
No.
But the real lesson from that draft to me was always, and I said this at the time, those teams were forcing quarterbacks at the top. Everyone knew they were forcing quarterbacks at the top. I know Trevor Lawrence was always going to go number one, but anyone who was projecting Wilson as this superstar, it was all based on comparisons to Patrick Mahomes that never really held up. And Trey Lance, like even the 49ers knew Trey Lance was a prospect, they just desperately wanted him for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, the Jefferson one must be the year before or the year after. Michael Parsons is the other best player in that one, and he got.
Sorry, they were teammates. That's what it was. They were teammates, and he came the year after them. That's why I'm connecting the two. Imagine that offense, by the way, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. Good luck.
Tying us up here at the end, Trevor Lawrence obviously was the number one pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars in that draft. Has been somewhat disappointing, was absolutely annihilated at the weekend by Azeez Al-Shaair in that hit. there was some debate at the TV at the time. I was like, I'm not even sure that's an ejection. He might be in trouble. And now he's been banned for 3 games for it because possibly because of the outcry. And it looked pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Probably deserves 3 games.
I thought it was awful.
Yeah, DeMeco Ryans is doing that coach thing where he's coming out and kind of defending his player, but I think he's gone a bit beyond reasonable at this stage, where he's like saying it was the Jaguars' fault for the reaction and all this kind of stuff. And then like everyone saw that, knew straight away that was a horrendous hit. The only thing I can think of that's worse than that is, and look, maybe he didn't do this on purpose. Maybe he was just out of control coming in and it was a split second thing. But he does have a history as well. Like there, it's not like this is a once-off case. He's not Brandon Merriweather now, but there's a bit of a history there.
There's a head-on shot from the ground where you see he braces the elbow right before it hits his face. Now, do you brace naturally when you're about to have a collision? I don't know, but the elbow lifts into his face, having already dived after the slide. You know what I mean? So if he's out of control, that's his own fault too. But he braces his elbow straight into the face. Oh, it's a rotten hit. Like, it really is. 3 games. It's funny. I know 3 games in a 17-game season is actually a lot comparatively, but I feel like that's not enough in terms of it just feels wrong that he's back playing again this month.
Yeah, and I haven't heard what the impact was on the quarterback and how long he might be out, but...
Yeah, he was ruled out straight away anyway, which shows you that at least
the impact
was high. Like, yeah.
Get the magic sponge.
I think he was questionable for about 15 seconds, you know, and then it was like upgraded to out.
Yeah.
He was prone when he was hit, so they had no real choice, because as soon as his arms go stiff like that after you take a hit to the head, you're pretty much guaranteed to be in concussion protocol. The one thing I can think of with that, though, is the only thing I can think of that's worse than that is when someone intentionally goes for the knee in someone's blind spot. But even in that argument, like, there you might wreck your knee. The worst case scenario after this hit, like you just mentioned with Lawrence, like, that's a concussion that has long lasting effects long after any football career. So yeah, that it's really hard to defend. It's impossible to defend, really.
The best thing for the Patriots now is that they have a quarterback but keep losing and get a very high
by
draft
by 1 point.
It's a perfect scenario, right? You must be happy now.
Field goal. Yeah, but what's your instinct as a fan? Like, you're heading towards that position this season. Like, if you had that field goal 68 yards to win, it would have broke the NFL record. You want it to go over, like, don't you? You're excited. And then it drops out and you go, yeah, look, I mean, it's fine. I don't know what the draft is like this year, but I think you're probably better off getting a high one on a year when you're not going for a quarterback anyway.
Absolutely.
There's less chance of a bust. You get good offensive line, good receiver maybe, although I think the Patriots should be banned from drafting receivers at this point for at least like a 5-year moratorium on receivers. But yeah, like the what they showed on... It's funny, I watched a lot of that game on Sunday, which I haven't been doing really with the Pats games. And on offense, Drake May is the only player that's standing out at all. You know, Ramondre does the odd good thing and stuff like that, but he's like really just got Hunter Henry to work with. It's really sad, but he's playing really well. And then...
Kendrick Bourne is always competent.
Maybe, yeah, and like Booty and odds. Like, it's a motley crew. And then on the defense, like, Christian Gonzalez just stands out an absolute mile, like, as well. He is like one of the best young secondary players in the league. So you've got that to work with. It's not a lot, but it's, you know, there's two stars. You build them up into something. You get a high draft pick next year. You get another high second round pick as well that you should be able to do something with.
Speaking of mad draft picks, you're watching Christian Gonzalez right now and you're seeing how good he is. And like, he was, as a prospect, was just phenomenal, phenomenal prospect. I was amazed he fell outside of the top 5, never mind into the latest parts of the top 20. The cornerback the Washington Commanders took ahead of him, they just released him. And you're like, how did you guys get this so wrong? A guy who's not even on your team anymore compared to Christian Gonzalez, who was just ridiculous. But I had a very quick look there, Mikvia. What do you want next year for Drake May? Do you want a star-studded wide receiver, or do you want a potentially generational running back? Because that seems to be the two options for the top 5.
I don't know, to be honest. I'd have to do some study between now and March or whatever.
Let me see if I can entice you further. Travis Hunter played for Colorado. He's playing for Deion Sanders in college. He plays wide receiver and cornerback.
He's the
so both
plays guy. Yeah. I don't think he's going to do that in the NFL. I've been reading about this guy. This is... It would be exciting.
If anyone
has a history of that, the Patriots played Troy Brown, a cornerback, for a full season. They played Edelman and Nickelback 1 year for
a lot of
plays.
That's a tight end.
Mike Vrabel popped in and caught a few touchdowns over the years, yeah, as well. So,
and
maybe a two-way player is exactly what the Pats need. Keep the tradition up.
And he's coming from Deion Sanders' school, who played not only two positions, but two sports. So there, it's a perfect cross section of it. And the other guy is Ashton Janty from Boise State, who apparently is just putting up like 400 yards a game or something ridiculous. I don't watch college football, so that's probably
you'd
wrong.
You'd be naturally worried about a running back, even though I think we're ranking the position again.
Yeah. And maybe you just get ahead of everybody else, overdrafting them for the next few years. But if this guy is as good as everybody says, I very briefly went to the order of the season ended today. The order of the season ended today for the NFC would be the Lions, who are a good team, and the Eagles second, who are a good team. The Lions would have a bye. The Eagles would play the Commanders. The Commanders are no good anymore. The Seahawks are the third seeded team in the NFC. They'd be up against the Packers, and the Falcons against the Vikings. The winner of this year's Super Bowl is coming from the AFC, unless the Lions somehow upset them in the final.
Yeah.
That is it.
Well, that's the division thing, though. There's two very, very weak divisions. I think the Packers could have a bit of a say. And yeah, you're right. I think there's only three teams, and the Packers are only a maybe. They're only a if everything goes right on the day kind of team. And also the Lions...
Not even everything.
The Lions have now four, I think, long-term injuries in their starting 11 defensive players. Like, that's getting a little bit worrying. Eventually, their defense is going to be shit. Like, it's just the way... If one more guy goes down or somebody's form drops,
and
everything just collapses.
And somebody finds out how to completely kill them in one of those games they play.
Not even everything. They just need Jordan Love to get really, really hot for that playoff run, and like, because he's got that level of talent that he could. But realistically, we're bearing the lead here. All Jura's doing is shitting on the NFC because the 49ers are now out of it.
They've just been so terrible. Like, not even in the last two games, the last 2 weeks, as the season careers off a cliff. And it's fair to say the natives are getting restless, that there's talk of, maybe everything needs a reset.
Oh, really? They're not giving them the year's grace, no?
It has always been
poor.
There was always going to be a hangover, I think, from the heartbreak of last season. And then the injury profile has just been very unfortunate. But they're massively top heavy. All of their top earners are like the second or third highest paid player at their position. And they're all late 20s, just about to become 30. And you just can't do that. You need incredible drafts.
It's interesting. It's something we don't really talk about much in terms of roster building. But I remember there was a big kind of piece done around the time when the Patriots' second run, the four Super Bowls, won three of them in 5 years, before Brady finished. And one of the things that they basically built the roster on was mid-level guys, $12 million a year guys. And they had more of them than anybody else. They had less big earners, but they also had less minimum guys.
So there was
They built their roster on these mid-level, and that's how they built their... And it's a very unusual thing in the NFL, but it sounds like the 49ers are on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So when something goes wrong...
Would you pay George Kittle if you have him? Yes. Would you pay Christian McCaffrey if you have him? Yes. Would you pay Fred Warner if you have him? Yes.
But then their backups are going to be league minimum.
Yeah.
And roster fillers.
But the problem with that approach now is the middle market doesn't exist anymore because of the quarterback salaries. That actually has been taken away, essentially. Now you've got this massive gap of you're either paying someone $20 million a year to be 10th best or 5th. Like DJ Moore's a great example. He gets basically top 5 wide receiver money. He's probably not a top 5 wide receiver when you go through the list. He's probably 12 to 16 or whatever. So you can't actually do what they did previously because you've got to pay your quarterback $40 million or you've got to have a quarterback who's not going to win anything. So it's a really difficult place, and it's actually a thing that I think the NFL needs to work to fix and correct because it's not good for the sport in general. You don't want to have a team like the 49ers where everyone are the most important pieces are hurt, so now the team can't even compete, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder if there's a world though where you keep trading away young quarterbacks on the promise that you're going to find somebody who is at least replacement level. So Brock Purdy will get $50 million a year next year from zero, basically, what he's been on. Maybe he'll get $45 million or $40 million, right? Mm. But it's still outrageous money, which means they won't be able to pay everybody else. And they've also paid Brandon Ayuk, who went out straight away, didn't catch a ball and then went out straight away.
So what you're saying is the idea here is maybe look for another Brock Purdy for the next 2 years, like, and let him go.
Yeah, you trade him for picks to a team.
It's tough for fan bases, isn't it, though? Because you get attached, right, this is our quarterback, this is the guy we're going to build around. And then it's like, sorry, no, we're playing Moneyball here.
Well, it's like the 76ers, yeah. Here's our plan. But like
the forever project, yeah.
Yeah, you just need to win.
You need some serious job security for that.
You do. They've got long-term contracts and you need an owner who decided that they want to do it as well. It's just that, like, Purdy's really good and will be excellent for 10 years as long as the injuries, which seem to be fairly consistent at the moment, haven't taken that little zing out of him. But he's good enough to be, you know, between 8th and 14th in a season. If he goes really well, he'd be top 5. And if he has a bad season, he'll be 18th or 19th. He won't be bottom of the pile, which is decent, right? Which is worth 40 million a year, it turns out. All of those QBs at that level are going to get paid that. But I don't know if you can actually pay him and Fred Warner and all the rest of them. And then you're trading Fred Warner and you're trading Kittle and you're releasing Christian McCaffrey. And everyone's like, what are you doing? But I don't know. These are the vagaries. These are the things you think about when you've got no football to watch. Another episode in the books. We will see you next week, folks. Take care.
US Sport
on Off the Ball
with 888 Casino, 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.